another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went.
Hello, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't. Well, folks, you got me on another morning commute. It's been a long time since I've told you what the weather's like here in Dallas-Fort Worth. I guess the good side of Hurricane Gustav is we've had a couple days where it's been kind of cloudy, kind of windy, and in the 70s. And for early September in Dallas-Fort Worth, windy and 70 degrees is a gift that we'll take any time we can get it. I just wish it hadn't come at the expense of some of my fellow Texans and some of the Louisianans who are dealing with flooding and damage, etc., that this hurricane brought. But up here, we got barely any rain from it. I'd say less than a quarter inch and a real cooling. And remember, folks, I tell you about the weather once in a while because that's what friends do. They talk about the weather. And I consider all of you my listening audience, which is ever growing, to be my friends. Before we start on the topic of today's show, I want to talk about a few things. Number one, I want to remind everybody about the Listener Appreciation Contest, and I keep promising to give out these books. Well, folks, I drew the five names, and I printed them out, and then I left them in the office, so I can't read them off to you today, because I don't trust my memory enough to do that. But today, I will be emailing those five people, and letting them know they won, and I'll be announcing their names on the show tomorrow. I also want to point this out. I know sometimes when people fill out forms on the internet, they don't put their real email address in there. So I'm going to email these people, and they're going to get through the weekend to get back to me and say where they want their book shipped. If I go 5 days and any of them don't get back, I'm going to draw another name and give the book to someone who gave me their real email address. So if you haven't entered the Listener Appreciation Contest yet, please do. And when you do, make sure you put your real email address in there and your real name so that if you win, you'll get your iPod or your other prize. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I actually tossed one of the winners, if you want to call it that, quote-unquote, because when I looked at it, I looked at the name, and it was like LLL, and the email address was like xxyy@yyzz.com, and I'm like, okay, well, that's not real. Just threw that away. So that was a real person. I just had no way to get in touch with them, so they could have just as easily been the one that got picked for the iPod. So make sure when you fill out the contest form, folks, you put your real name and your real email. The other thing is, if you're not on our notification list yet, you can fill out a form at the website for that. That just every time I do a new show, my system automatically sends out a mass email just to say there's a new show. If you subscribe to that, and if you decide that you don't want to get emails anymore, please do not put me or report me as a spammer. I don't spam anybody. And if you've reported me as a spammer and now you're listening to your show, to this show still, you just decide you don't want to be on the notification list, shame on you for reporting me as a spammer. Do not file me as a spammer in Yahoo. Do not put report as spam button. Simply click my link and unsubscribe. If you don't want my notifications, that's okay. Put it there as a service to my listeners. It makes sure that you just know that there's a new show up, that it's what it's about, and it tells you what it's about so that you can decide this is a show for you to listen to or not. It's one extra email in your box. Delete it if it's not a show that you're interested in. That's kind of my plea to my audience to please don't, and this is not just for me, don't use the report as spam button to unsubscribe from things that you actually subscribe from. Part of my career is I'm an internet marketer, and it's very frustrating for people that do things the right way, 100% opt-in only, to be reported as spammers. And it causes us grief, and it causes us problems. And let me tell you something, the people that are real spammers, you're not accomplishing anything because they don't play by the rules, and it's just like gun control. If you don't play by the rules, the law doesn't matter. So the people that are actually spamming you, they buy a domain, they use it for 48 hours, and they throw it away, and they buy another one. So when you report them, you've accomplished nothing. So use spam filtering, whatever, but this reporting people for spamming, you're only going to hurt the innocent. So that is my public service announcement to my fellow people that market products and services on the internet so that we can get into today's real show. Which is real threats. What are they and why the heck do people like us do what we do? Are we all a bunch of freaks running around with tinfoil hats that are convinced the world is going to end tomorrow with Chicken Little syndrome, screaming the sky is falling, missing out on all the good things in life? Or are we simply realists and But beyond that, are we actually very optimistic people, very positive people that believe in ourselves, that believe in the people around us, and that believe that preparation is a good thing, and it doesn't necessarily mean that something has to go wrong. It just means that we acknowledge the fact that it could, and we do not want to be caught in a dark night, penniless, with our pants down. That's how I feel, and I'm going to talk about some of the threats today. To kind of drive that point home and drive home the positive aspects of survivalism. You know, what's moved me into this line of thought was I had a couple different people recently who've been taking part in telling other people about my show. And a lot of people that they tell about my show really love it. And then a lot of people are people who really aren't right for the show, or the show's not right for them, however you want to put it. They're not people that are into survivalism. They're not even people that are into self-sufficiency, emergency preparedness, alternative energy, or debt elimination. They're just normal, everyday people that are still living blind in kind of the matrix mode, where everything seems normal to them and everything seems safe, and they trust in the system, and they're either a staunch Democrat or a staunch Republican or a staunch independent. They believe that the system is what it is and that it's safe and it's the best we've ever had, and don't worry about it. Go to work and come home every day, and if you need to buy something on a credit card, do it. So they've been making comments along the lines of, you know, you need to stop listening to this guy, or this guy's nuts, or this guy's crazy. I talked to two different individuals yesterday that have been told by friends of theirs that I'm crazy. And I thought, well, if they think I'm crazy, they're probably telling you you're crazy too when you say things like, you know, something so-and-such was on sale, so I bought a little bit extra and stored it in the pantry. Or, you know, I think I'm going to move some of my 401k plan into cash or bonds because the market looks a little risky right now. Or, you know what, I can't go out with you guys tonight and get drunk and drink beer because I'm going to pay off my credit cards in the next 6 months. Right? They probably think you're crazy too. So I thought maybe I would go through some of the threats that I see as things that sooner or later must occur. Not might occur, but sooner or later must occur. Now, they could happen tomorrow, or they could happen 100 years from now, but all of the things that I'm going to cover today will occur in the United States. Before I go into them, though, I want to talk about the reason that this stuff needs to be explained in the first place. I want to talk about the psychological changes in the United States of America and around much of the civilized world. And I think we can see how the culture changes based on how fables are told. So what I would like to tell you right now, it takes about a minute to tell this story. My grandfather told me this story as a young boy, repeatedly on his knee, and as I got a little bit bigger, sitting on the porch in front of him listening to him, the story of the ant and the grasshopper. Now, if you're a young person, you may have never heard this story exactly the way that I'm going to tell it to you, because it's been altered. It's been altered by people that didn't want people to feel too bad for the grasshopper. Some of you may never even heard the story of the ant and the grasshopper because it's considered too traumatic and too idealistic and too independent, and it doesn't, you know, beget the beauties of socialism and sharing. All right? So here's the original version of the ant and the grasshopper. The ant and the grasshopper knew each other. They would stay out in the field all day long in the summer, and it was beautiful, and it was a wonderful time of year, and there was plenty of food for everybody. Now, the grasshopper would get up, and he would eat some food, his grass, and then he would play all day long. He'd get a little bit more hungry, he'd eat some more food, and then toward the evening, he'd get hungry again, he'd eat some more, but mostly what he did all day long was he played, and he frolicked, and he hopped around in the grass. The ant would also eat whenever he was hungry, but through the rest of the day, instead of playing and frolicking, the ant spent most of his time gathering food and taking it back to his anthill and burying it in the ground and storing it for the winter. And the grasshopper used to yell to the ant, "You're crazy, you're nuts. What's wrong with you? Why don't you enjoy life? Come play like me." And the ant said, "Grasshopper, winter's coming. When it comes, it's going to be very, very cold. You haven't even created a place for yourself to live where you'll be warm, much less saved yourself any food. My friend, you will die in the winter if you do not start taking life more seriously. And I do play, but I also work, and I store, and I save." And the grasshopper said, "Do what you like. The sky's not falling. I'm going to continue to play." As the fall came, it began to get cold. And it got colder and colder. And the grasshopper's life got harder and harder. But he still played and he still frolicked. And eventually a frost came and killed all the grass, dropped all the leaves. And there was nothing for the grasshopper to eat. And the ant went into his hole where it was warm and lived through the winter, content, happy, and snug in his hole. And the grasshopper died. Okay? That's the original story. That's how it ends. The grasshopper died. His failure to prepare, his failure to plan, his failure to work, being a lazy, lackadaisical, jovial jerk that wouldn't take advice from people that were working hard and saving, dies. Okay? That's the original story. Now, why is it important that that's the original story? Because the story's been amended over the years. I've seen in a book where the end of the story is the grasshopper's really cold and he's really miserable, and the ant brings the grasshopper into his home and shares his food with him. And the grasshopper learns next year to work hard and to do the things that the ant did. What are the problems with this? One, kids ain't going to believe it. The first thing an ant would do with a grasshopper is eat him. All right? The grasshopper crawled into an ant mound. In the wintertime, he's toast. He's going to get eaten. But the other side of this, you don't see any grasshoppers out there living that lifestyle, right? Grasshoppers continue to frolic, play, and eat. They're supposed to do that. It's a fable. It's not reality, you know? But that's their personality. That's what a grasshopper does. He jumps around and eats grass. An ant works diligently and stores up food. The ants live through the winter. The colony survives. The grasshoppers die. And it's probably going to be the point in the future where we're going to have some kind of story like the email joke that's gone around where Jesse Jackson comes and pickets the ant for being a racist, and Kermit the Frog thinks it's not even as being green at a protest rally, and people seize the ant's assets and redistribute them to the grasshopper and something like that. There's an email that went around like that. It's probably where this story is eventually going. My point is that the lesson was he died. We've taken that lesson away from our children. And that's why people don't acknowledge the threats that I'm about to go through and the reality behind them. Not because of this one story. The story is not the cause. The story is a symptom seeing a change. Our entire culture of what we teach our children today and what our generations have been taught less and less of coming forward from the World War II generation forward. The grasshopper stopped dying. It's a metaphor for many different places where the grasshopper stopped dying. We stopped letting people see the consequences of not only their actions, but their inactions. Now, remember as I go through these various threats, as I have assigned them, that these are not the only threats by any means, and I'm sure I'll get comments like, what about this, what about that? Yeah, those two. These are just some that I believe not if they'll happen, but when they happen and how severe they'll be when they occur. And they'll happen more than once. They'll happen repeatedly throughout human history as long as we're here for them to occur, as long as we build societies, as long as we have commerce, as long as we have people creating economic systems, as long as you have people exposing each other to different regions and different things and different pathogens and all these different things, we'll have some of these things occurring. The first thing that I think most of us actually prepare for is pretty basic. It's either severe recession, and what we're going through right now, well, no matter what they tell you folks, we're in a recession. But it's not severe. We don't have people standing in soup lines like the Great Depression or anything like that. There is the chance to pull out of it and come into a recovery period. There's a chance that we won't for a long time. It all depends. How far are we going to crash this time before we recover? And I think a lot of us believe that it would be really actually beneficial if we'd have a big crash right now. Not a depression crash, but a recession crash, because a lot of us believe that the longer we delay that, the worse the infection is going to become, and when we do have it, the worse it's going to be, which is the other side of a severe recession, which is a complete depression, a 1930s type event. A lot of people don't think that can happen anymore. I mean, they tell you in high school now that, hey, here's what happened in the Great Depression. People made a run on the banks, and now we got this great thing called FDIC insurance, and you won't lose your money if the banks fail. Well, you know what? A couple little regional banks failed, and the FDIC is almost out of funds. All right? So if one big bank fails, which I think we're going to see, I keep telling you this, I think sometime between now and a little bit after the election, we're going to see a major United States bank failure occur. And there's experts out there that back that feeling. All right? So when that happens, how are they going to, you know, if they can barely handle these little banks, these little IndyMac-type banks, right? How are they going to handle it if we have, you know, a nationwide bank collapse, or two of them, or three of them, which is definitely possible. Not only that, I mean, just if you look at the world economy in general, if we have some of our enemies move against us economically, which is the greatest sword they can wield, what could that do to us? There's just so many different things that can cause our economy to decline at a rapid pace and stay depressed for a long time. Could end up in a situation like Japan. You know, Japan's economy hasn't grown for like 15 years. They've been flat at the bottom. Now, fortunately, they haven't continued to drop for them, but a lot of that's because we've propped them up. You know, what happens to them if we can't prop them up anymore? There's a fundamental reality here that we cannot depend on the market to always go up. We cannot depend on real estate to always increase in value. We can't depend on our investments to always grow. We can't depend on the dollar to always stay strong. We cannot depend on our employer to always employ us. We cannot see our employers as an endless supply of money, because their supply is finite. And the smaller the company you work for, the bigger at risk they are. All right, and the smaller the company you work for, that means in some ways the bigger at risk you are. But in a very large company, if your job is not something that's key and integral to what the company does every day, if they can get by without you, you probably are at more risk because they care less about you. And they will cut you faster than a small employer who does care about you, who doesn't really want to see you laid off. Because the person in a small employer that actually makes the decision to let you go probably knows your first name. And the person at IBM that will lay you off doesn't know your first name and could care less about you as an individual. Not because they're evil, not because they're mean, but because in their line of work, they can't care about you as an individual because they lay off thousands of people all the time. It's like the doctor that appears not to care about the one person who's dying and there's nothing he can do to save them. If he wants to do his job, that's the attitude he has to have. He really does care about it, and he probably carries a lot of that person who died with him for the next few days. It is only somebody else in that situation that takes that person out of his mind. But he has this persona that, hey, you know what, I can't save him, so I'm going to work on him. It looks cold, it looks calculated, it's just the only way he can function. And in a giant corporation where you have to lay off entire blocks of people, you have to think the same way. These are all risks associated with economic problems, economic depression, economic recession. And I'm not going to talk about the solution to that till the end, because the solution to all of these things, as different as they're going to be, is remarkably similar. The next threat is an actual economic collapse. Beyond recession, beyond depression, where you see real estate values fall in half to three quarters of what they were at their peak. And you see that happen over a one-year period, and you see people constantly upside down in their mortgages. And you might say that's already occurred. That has not occurred. We've seen major drops in places where the market was excessively inflated. Real estate is fairly stable right now in spite of all the hoopla you've heard, but it doesn't have to necessarily stay that way. As banks start to fail, and one bank owes another bank on the mortgage, and banks start defaulting to banks, then we start to get into a problem. Because now banks can't afford to loan money, so the available funds to purchase property go down. That decreases the demand, which is already in a recession right now. But it further gets depressed. Then you'll see property fall. Then you'll see property fall like you can't believe. And you'll also see more and more job loss. You'll see more and more people having to take income levels that are lower to take another job to replace the one they've lost. Now you'll start to see the market flooded with inventory. Right now we have like in a flood situation, right? The real estate market today is where, you know, if you open your door, a little bit of water trickles in and it looks like somebody spilled a bucket on the floor. That's the flood we're dealing with today. Small, but you can clean it up with a mop, right? The floodgates could open any time. We're simply aware that that's the reality. When that happens, the value of the dollar begins to plummet. Okay? All of these things add up to a situation, and there's tons of different ways. I'm not going to go into all of them. Just understand, the economy of the United States could collapse at any time, and every society that's ever been built on a paper economy, not backed by a commodity like gold or silver, has collapsed. That's why I say it's not if, it's when and how hard. Sooner or later, this economy must collapse. Now, it could collapse by changing into something better, or it could collapse by falling to the ground and having to be rebuilt into something better, but sooner or later, it has to end. We can't continue to just print money backed by nothing, which is what the Federal Reserve does today. That's a threat. Okay, keep that in mind, because I'm going to go to a totally different thread now. The next threat out there is climate change. And some of you that have listened to me before go, well, Jack's not a believer in man-made global warming. I'm not. I don't think, right, that your tailpipe of your car is heating the planet up. I think the planet's been getting warmer recently, and I think it might continue to get warmer, or it might really cool down. I think both of those situations can be bad. In many ways, getting warmer would be better. Global cooling, which occurred in what was called the Little Ice Age, killed over half the population of the planet in one shape, form, or another through disease, through famine, okay, and through pure exposure to the elements. Half the population was reduced during the Little Ice Age. You got to really think about the reality. And we like to believe that today in the world of air conditioners and heaters that it doesn't really matter. Folks, we still have to eat. And if you're a vegetarian, you have to eat vegetable matter, which grows in the ground, which grows less, okay, when we have severe climate conditions. And now, if you're like me and you're highly carnivorous, you might say, well, you know what, I don't care if the potatoes don't grow or the wheat doesn't grow or whatever, because I eat meat. Yeah, what does it eat? You know? You got to think about this. The entire food chain of the planet starts with algae. And it goes all the way up through the different plants and vegetative matter before it moves up into the food portion of the chain that is omnivorous and carnivorous. If you adversely affect the food chain at the smallest levels, right, eventually you create a cascade through the entire food chain. So climate change could lead to food shortages. Right? Plain and simple. Climate change could lead to the spreading of disease, which is another threat I'll get into in a second. The whole point is that this little bubble that we live in, that we think of as a normal climate, is actually an aberration. This is not a normal climate. If you look at what we can tell about the temperature of the planet, okay, from as early as we can kind of figure out what it was, all the way up till now, you'll see that we're actually in an anomaly. We're actually in a perfect little bubble that is perfect for humanity to survive, that keeps ice caps kind of in balance, and we've been getting a little out of that, and that's why they've been melting, right? But in the history of the planet, the averages for long durations have either been significantly lower or significantly higher than they are right now. These little areas we're at like now are very similar to what occurred during what was called the medieval warming, where there were Vikings living in Greenland that had sheep that lived on the hillsides. Right? You talk about the Greenland ice sheet melting today? Half of Greenland was green. That's why they called it Greenland during the medieval warming. There were no tailpipes. My point is that the climate can fluctuate. And when the climate fluctuates, it impacts everything across the globe. So that's kind of that threat in a nutshell. And I may be kind of blowing through these things because, you know, I'm trying to just make a point here that there are things that threaten us, and I want to talk a little bit about how you prepare for them and the commonalities at the end. And I've talked about these at length before, and I'll talk about them at length again. So don't think I'm leaving things out here as I jump to the next threat, which is pandemic flu. I did an entire show on this. The World Health Organization, your government, is telling you, sooner or later, it's going to happen. We're going to have a pandemic. You know, the one that happened in, 1918, Spanish flu, killed 670,000 Americans, and according to that, I've heard different statistics on this, I've even been questioned on my statistics are from the World Health Organization, who state that about 50 million people died during the Spanish flu globally. You could talk about better medical care today and all, but when the hospitals are overrun, you don't get much medical care. And we don't know what type of flu it's going to be. It could be avian flu, but it could be a flu we've not even seen yet that makes a leap, that makes a mutation, that kills off a million or more people. in a couple weeks or a couple months. And a pandemic flu, folks, is not like a Hurricane Katrina, where we have 3 or 4 days of hell, and then we can move in from a safe zone to try to recover things. A pandemic could last 6 months to a year, and there is no safe zone. The only solution in a pandemic, and this again, this is from the World Health Organization, this is from FEMA, this is from the federal government of the United States, this is from the government of the United Kingdom, the only solution in these scenarios will be quarantine, lockdown, stay in place, reduce exposure, and wait it out. That's it. It's the only thing we'll be able to do. All right? So again, this is grasshopper and the ant, folks. People like me are the ants. We're just taking little extra steps. We still play. We're still optimistic. We're the ones out in our backyards growing gardens, getting dirt on our hands, and living life the way it was meant to be lived. We're not, you know, all holed up in bunkers somewhere, tinfoil hats in place, you know, AR-15s at the ready, folks. We're normal people just like you. We're just taking these extra steps because of these threats. You know, and then kind of another one that I think people, like, overlook if you live in certain areas are regional weather disasters. If you live anywhere in the United States, there's some type of regional weather disaster you have to worry about. In my case, the biggest threat I have are tornadoes. Those are like an acute natural disaster. They happen and they go away very quickly. There's not a hell of a lot you can do about it. And unfortunately, nobody in this city has saw fit to build houses with basements because the soil is difficult to do it with. And most of the houses are built like mine with open concept, and it's not a good safe room. And all you can do is hope you don't get hit, make sure you have some things stored in different parts of the home and outside the home, and have good insurance. And pay attention to the weather and do what you can to take cover. But unfortunately, that's all we can do. We can't evacuate for tornadoes. We would evacuate from late March through most of June, maybe into July some years. Can't do that. It's not realistic. And it's not a proper response to the threat. So that's my biggest threat. Flooding, a little bit of a local threat of flooding. Not really where I live, but in the city. Down on the coast, you've got hurricanes. Up north, you've got blizzards. All right, and there's sun. And there's out west coast, you've got volcanic. Both coasts, you have the potential for tsunami. People would like to believe that only happens over in Indonesia, but there are severe tsunami threats for the East Coast and the West Coast. On the West Coast, we have parts of our West Coast and that experience lots of earthquakes. There's some faults and fissures in the Pacific, and there's some potential for landslide that could create tsunamis on the West Coast. I've watched an entire piece on it. It makes a lot of sense. On the Atlantic Coast, there's an island in the Canary Islands. I believe it's from the Canary Islands, somewhere off the coast of Africa, where a giant volcano sooner or later will erupt, and when it does, a chunk of a mountain will fall into the Atlantic, and it will engulf the East Coast in a tsunami. You'll have about 3 to 4 hours to get out. Now, it's not if, folks. That's going to happen. That is absolutely going to happen at some point in time. There's no way that can be avoided. When you drop, you know, a huge, huge, huge chunk of rock into an ocean, it makes a big wave. Right? If you don't believe that, ask the people in Thailand. They'll explain to you how it works. They had it happen with an earthquake where a fault line kind of popped under the ocean. It's the same effect, though. So regional weather disasters are another one. And then the last one I'm going to sum up with is peak oil. Peak oil is going to happen. It could happen 100 years from now. We could all be being lied to. There could be more reserves than we know about. Efficiencies could rise to a point where the individual is using less. There's all ways that this could be postponed and eliminated, but we could also be lied to the other way, and the reserves might not be anywhere near what we're being told the reserves are. And it doesn't matter how much we have in reserve. It matters how fast we can produce it in relation to demand. Peak oil is not where we run out of oil. It's where demand exceeds capacity, and it causes a rapid spike in prices that makes what we just went through look like a joke. And in America, we might end up paying $15 to $16 a gallon, and you socialists over in Europe, you guys might pay $30 or $40, all right? Because every time it gets worse and every time your economy goes into recession, the government will tax you harder to try to fix it. Fortunately, we haven't gotten that far yet, but we're not far off behind you, folks. So peak oil is another threat. I can do a whole show on peak oil, so I don't want to go into that. I just want to point out, okay, so here I've gone through and I've given you, what, 6-7 threats to our survival, to our stability, and to our lifestyles. And pick one of them. At least one of them should seem likely to any individual. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, you've laid out all this gloom and doom for us. Well, what the heck do we do about it? Well, in a nutshell, modern survivalism is as follows. Figure out ways to provide your own food for yourself, including ways that you can do that in spite of the climate that you're in or if the climate changes. Store and save food. Preserve and protect your wealth. Do not stay 100% in high-risk investments. All right? Don't let somebody tell you, oh, you're 25. Don't worry about it. Put it all in high-risk mutual funds. It'll be fine. All right? Have cash reserves. Store up food. Have at least a six-month food supply on hand in your home, cached in various locations, so that if something happens to one portion of it, you do not lose it all. Have the ability to defend yourself in case civilization breaks down. All right? Now, there's more, but that's basically it. All we do that makes us different is we store some extra food, and we know food goes up in price all the time anyway. It's one of the fastest things on the inflation scale. We figure out how to live more efficient, low-cost lifestyles. We eliminate debt. All right? We have cash reserves. So if we lose our job, we're not bankrupt in 2 weeks. In other words, modern survivalism, folks, isn't being a tinfoil hat-wearing freak that thinks that everybody's out to get you. Now, there are some people in the survival community that are that kind of person. If that's you, you're welcome here. Because a lot of times, those guys have a lot of wisdom. They're nuts, but they're smart, too. Because they prepare for the things we don't think of. Right? Some of them are not realistic, but some of the things they come up with are. Some of those tinfoil hat freaks are what awakened the rest of us that are kind of rational about this to rational planning, to modern survivalism, to following the Boy Scout model of being prepared, to not changing the story of the grasshopper and the ant to the ant saved the grasshopper's ass. The ant doesn't save the grasshopper's ass. The grasshopper dies. That's how the story ends. And I'll ask you, if you think that the survival community is eccentric and insane and crazy, if you're one of those people who think we're overreacting and we're not optimistic enough and we're too pessimistic and we're all doom and gloom, were you ever told the story of the ant and the grasshopper? And when you were, what happened to the grasshopper at the end of the story? He probably didn't die. Or if he did die, the grandfather or uncle or what have you that told you the story, you probably think he was an old eccentric coot now. Let me tell you something about your grandparents, folks. They were pretty smart people. Discover Card, MasterCard, and Visa could have sent them every credit card offer in the world, and your grandparents would have thrown them on the compost heap. They wouldn't even have wanted to know what a credit card was. They stayed out of debt. They were smart about the way they lived. They had far less, most likely, than you do today. But yet they lived more fulfilling lives. They had wisdom. They had wisdom because they were preppers when nobody called it prepping. I said before, 1900, you walked into any American house, there was probably 6 months or more worth of food in the house. It was grown in the backyard. It was stored grain. It was stored rice. It was all the things that modern survivalists do today. And the beauty of these simple things, these simple concepts of being prepared, having food reserves, having water reserves, having the ability to defend yourself, not being completely at risk with your money, staying low on debt, every one of those threats that I've outlined, you'll be stronger in response to them if you do those things. Period. If you have a greenhouse, you grow your own food. You have a garden, and you grow your own food. You have cash instead of having all your money in stocks. You have a little bit of gold or silver. All right? You have some water stored up. You have some food stored up. Any of these things happen, you're in better shape. Now, the other side of that, this is the entire crux of my show. If nothing goes wrong, you're still better off than everybody else. Food will go up in price. You'll be living with today's economy on today's income at yesterday's food prices. Okay? You won't be buying as much food because you'll be growing some of it for yourself. You won't be using shopping as a hobby because you'll have a garden to take care of, which will give you something to do with all that free time that you have. All these things are basic and simple. Folks, if anybody tells you you're crazy, eccentric, gloom and doom, don't believe them. Stand strong. Stand by your principles. Stand by what you believe. realize that you're more optimistic than them because you probably have faith in individual liberty, individual freedom, and the individual's ability to solve their own problems. You're not going to make irrational decisions, and above all, you know at the end of the story, the grasshopper dies. Doesn't mean you don't feel bad for the grasshopper. Doesn't even mean that you wouldn't save the grasshopper, but there's millions of grasshoppers, and you can only save a couple. That's the reality that we've taken away and we've taken out of educating our children. Remember that when you tell your kids the story of the ant and the grasshopper, remember it's a hard lesson. Make sure you tell them the truth about the way the story ends. On that note, I'd like to sign off on today's show. Please tune in tomorrow. Again, this has been Jack Spiracle with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
And you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.